from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, as part of KQED's Election 2016 coverage, we'll discuss California's Proposition 53. Known by its supporters as the Stop Blank Checks Initiative, it would require voter approval before the state issues revenue bonds for public works projects costing over $2 billion. Critics say the measure has been crafted to block Governor Brown's $15.5 billion Delta Tunnels projects. And as part of our ongoing state election coverage, we discuss and debate Proposition 53 next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. As part of KQED's Election 2016 coverage, we'll discuss California's Proposition 53 in this hour. The measure would require voter approval for any public works project using more than $2 billion in revenue bonds, which are repaid with funds generated by the project. Currently, voter approval is only needed for general obligation bonds. Proponents say Proposition 53 safeguards against bureaucrats running up state debt for pet projects, and opponents say the measure would make it even harder to achieve much-needed infrastructure improvements in California. As part of our ongoing state election coverage, we discuss the measure in this first Forum hour and hear arguments pro and con. But before we hear pro and con, we're going to hear from Marisa Lagos, who's right here in studio with us, who covers KQED California politics and government at California's Politics and Government Desk. Welcome, Marisa.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's just have you lay out for us what we're talking about here. I mean, voter approval is required for all state bonds, but not state revenue bonds, and this would switch that. Basically.
Yeah, not confusing at all, right?
So, well, you get in the weeds a bit here, right?
Yeah,
maybe you can
right
explain
away.
To us what the proposition is and what the difference is between those two bonds.
That's right. So general obligation bonds are the type that most voters would be familiar with because they vote on them. These are bonds that are repaid out of the state's general fund, so directly by taxpayers, and they are used to fund a wide variety of state costs and services. Lease revenue bonds, which is what Prop 53 deals with, are paid for by user fees. So we're talking about a toll bridge where in the both the interest and the borrowed money itself, the bond, can be repaid by those tolls, like the Bay Bridge, maybe a water project that's paid for by the water users. So the cost is borne by taxpayers, but it's by the taxpayers in that specific project area who, you know, pay for it through fees, although there is a caveat there, which is to say that prisons and some other public projects are paid for the reason by lease revenue bonds, wherein the state agency leases, like essentially pays out of their budget to lease back the project. And so in that case, taxpayers end up paying it for it. I mean, in all cases, taxpayers pay for this, right? But the question is whether voters should have to weigh in on these big projects if they are being paid for by user fees.
Well, the question is, are taxpayers supposed to be weighing in on
right.
this as well? It's a proposition that is mainly funded by one man, and this is a rich Stockton farmer and food processor by the name of Dean Cotopassi, who has put $4.5 million into this.
That's right. And Cotopassi, as you mentioned, is a farmer and food processor in the Delta area. And one of his big sort of issues with state government historically has been the governor's proposal for these twin tunnels under the Delta. And that project, as well as the governor's other pet project, which is the high-speed rail, are really the two projects that both sides, I think, agree would be most directly, immediately impacted by this. Although there's a whole host of projects in the future that could be. And one of the big sticking points between both sides on this, besides, you know, this sense that Cotopassi is essentially funding this broad ballot measure to attack two projects he doesn't like, although he insists it's all about debt and sort of, you know,
he's saving his grandparents, his grandchildren, he said many times publicly, from terrible debt and the taxpayers.
Right.
He's a philanthropist and he's dedicated to that purpose. At least that's not what he's on record as saying.
Yeah. And I mean, he's done a lot of great things in Stockton. I think that, you know, whatever his motives are, the opponents feel that they are mostly those two projects. He says otherwise. What's important, though, is this question of which projects would come under this measure. The measure is written to say only state projects. And there's a sense that a lot of local projects get state involvement when you talk about lease revenue bonds. And so, you know, would a statewide vote have to be taken for a water project in Southern California or for a bridge project in the Bay Area?
That's the crux of a lot of the argument, Tom Kahn. I mean, does it or doesn't it have impact on local projects?
Yeah, and I think that it's fair to say that you'll hear a lot about that in the coming hour. And my take on it is that we don't really know, and I think it would have to be sort of played out in a court of law. I think that the way the measure is written, you can make the argument on either side, and what is likely to happen is a lawsuit if it passes, given the uncertainty. You know, and so I think that for opponents, the question is whether it's fair to have a statewide vote. And of course, you know, we're facing a 17 ballot state ballot measures this November. So this could potentially drive that up. So the LAO, the legislative analyst in Sacramento, pointed out that, as I said, the two projects we know would be impacted are the tunnels and the high speed rail. But they raised this possibility that larger projects could end up getting broken up into several smaller projects if this passed, because it has a $2 billion threshold. So would a hospital campus or a sort of a broader issue, a broader project come under this? Or could you say, well, this is just a building, it's not $2 billion?
Well, this is what the legislative analyst's office meant when they said this is subject to considerable uncertainty.
That's true. And also, you know, the issue is general obligation bonds are subject to lower interest rates. So there is a thought that if this were to pass and, you know, folks in government would turn to either private financing, there could be some increased cost there. But, you know, I think on the yes side, they're saying that voters deserve to have a say in what they're going to pay for.
Well, you laid out very nicely, but the big argument in favor is the state is liable for over about $340 billion now in pensions, health care, and all the rest of it. So infrastructure, and again, I'm quoting Mr. Cortopassi on this, he says it's a good start.
Yeah, I mean, we're already paying back about $75 billion in general obligation bonds. There's $31 billion in bonds that have been approved but haven't been issued, and about $10 billion in lease revenue bonds. So we are using this type of financing, not as heavily as general obligation bonds, but it's certainly out there. And again, I think that when you look at the tunnels and high-speed rail, those are huge, very high-cost projects, and they're controversial. And so I think that it is interesting, this tact. If you believe Cortopassi, it's not just about those, but I think the sense among a lot of people is that it is.
Thank you, Marisa. As always, you've laid it out very nicely, I think, for us, and we're going to hear the pro and the con on this. Again, Marisa Lagos is a reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And let me tell you who is joining us on the pro side. John Kupal, spokesperson for Yes on 53 and president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, joins us from the state capitol. John Kupal, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. How are you doing?
Okay. Thank you for being here. And I want to thank Lauren Kay, who's also with us from Sacramento this morning, spokesperson for No on 53 and president of the California Foundation for Commerce and Education, a nonpartisan think tank affiliated with the California Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Lauren Kay.
Morning, Michael. Good to be here.
Good morning. Good to have you with us. And John Kupal, let's begin with you on the pro side. Let's talk about this in terms of the main reason voters should go for this. You're talking a lot about actually allowing for total cost and fiscal analysis for voters, and voters should be the ones to approve that. And $2 billion is a lot for voters to approve.
Yeah, it is. This doesn't impact lower amounts of debt. This is a very high threshold. And I'd like to state at the outset that at the inception of this project or this effort, we were not directly involved. However, when we looked at it, we thought it was pretty good. And the reason we thought it was pretty good is that it was fully consistent with the California policy to ensure that California voters have some input on major fiscal decisions, whether it is a significant new tax increase or, in this case, debt. And Mr. Cortopassi has been very concerned with debt for a long time, well before the Twin Tunnels became an issue. He financed full-page ads throughout California just talking about California's budget situation and the amount of debt. And the amount of debt California faces right now is subject to some degree of disagreement, but it could be as high as between $800 billion and over $1 trillion. And, of course, in that, we include the unfunded pension obligations and the promises made to public employees for their retirement health care costs.
But the real concern of Mr. Cotopassi and of those who support this measure like you is overspending and reckless borrowing by legislators. I mean, you're concerned about politicians
yes.
who are gaming the system and getting approval for, you know, about $330 billion in unsustainable debt.
Yes, I think that's absolutely correct. Now, remember, the original Constitution of California had a threshold of $300,000 for the assumption of debt, and that provision is still in the California Constitution. So
what are we talking about, a loophole here then, as you see it?
Well, we are. And there are all these esoteric debt financing arrangements, including I think Marissa mentioned the lease revenue bonds. This would, of course, extend beyond lease revenue bonds to pure revenue bonds. And, of course, at the local level, we see things called certificates of participation. Let's be very clear what this is about. All these esoteric debt instruments created by Wall Street and those who want these projects without voter approval have created these financing mechanisms to get around voter approval. They just don't want those pesky voters having a say or standing in the way of their development of major projects, whether those projects are good or bad. And let me say at the outset, my office is on 11th Street, and the parking garage across the street was built with revenue bonds, actually COPs. But in that situation, you had a readily identifiable revenue source. The problem with these mega projects, and as you get up to the billions and billions of dollars, the financing plan becomes shakier and shakier. And Exhibit A and B are the twin tunnels and the high-speed rail. The financing behind those is highly speculative, as many people have recognized.
Yeah, but can't you just have initiatives to block those? And also, I have to ask you, does this or doesn't this have an impact on local projects?
It doesn't have an impact on local projects. The exact language of the proposal says state, as used in herein, does not include a city and county, school district, community college district, or special district. So this applies to those projects where the state is at risk for having to backfill the financial obligation for the repayment of the revenue.
And, John, you're saying it's abundantly clear then in the way the proposition is worded that it does not affect local projects. Are you also saying that initiative couldn't be put on the ballot to block the tunnel or block the high-speed?
Yeah, it absolutely could, but that was not the motivation of the chief proponent, Mr. Cotopassi. As I said, he is concerned about the broader issue of debt. Had he wanted to draft an initiative specifically targeted toward the Twin Tunnels project, he very well could have done that and probably enhanced the chances of passage. But he sees a broader problem here, as we do in the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, about runaway debt and the fact that the state is running up a credit card that it's going to have a very difficult time paying off.
All right. Let me go to Lauren Kay, who's spokesperson for NOAA 53. You want to take that local question first, Lauren Kay?
Sure.
I mean, how does this affect, or does it affect, in your mind, have impact on local projects?
Oh, well, by the very terms of the measure, it affects local projects. John read one of the sentences in the measure where it defined what the state was. But let me just tell you, the measure also says that a state project includes a project by, quote, any joint powers agency or similar body created by the state or in which the state is a member. Now, a joint powers agency, that's kind of a fancy term, but that is a joint agency of local governments. Those are local governments that come together to form a larger agency and in many cases to pay for infrastructure projects. So, for example, the Orange County Transportation Agency is a joint powers agency. The San Diego Airport Authority is a similar body created by the state. The Metropolitan Transportation Agency in the Bay Area that runs the toll bridges, those are joint powers agencies with state involvement. So these agencies will all be affected by the measure because they fall under the terms of the proposal. So local agencies with purely local projects would be affected by this measure.
All right. We're going to have to obviously agree to disagree between the two of you on that. But why not have voters vote for these kind of projects and decide to put their imprimatur on it or to say yes or yay or nay?
Well, that's a great question. The reason that that we traditionally have not had a vote on these projects is because taxpayers are not at risk. Taxpayers vote on general obligation bond proposals like Marissa discussed, both at the state and at the local level, because the taxpayers are the ones holding the bag if things go south. In the case of the state general fund is responsible for repaying general obligation bonds. In the case of local agencies, those are actually local property taxes that are that would have to repay them. In the case of revenue bonds, state and local taxpayers are not on the hook. If these bonds go south, it's the bondholders that are on the hook, not the government agencies that are issuing them in the first place. If the toll revenues are not enough to pay for the bonds, the local taxpayers aren't on the hook. It's the bondholders.
And you're also arguing on the opposing side that this proposition threatens the water supply and drought preparedness. And I'd like to hear why you frame that argument, but also who's in this coalition. I mean, you've got a lot of people that you've banded together. I mean, construction workers and building people, people who are responsible for a lot of big infrastructure projects. Yeah.
Well, this coalition is a coalition of people who care about California growth. It's businesses, it's labor, it's local governments. Heck, it's a couple of local taxpayer organizations. It's really a very broad coalition of citizens and organizations that care about growth and are frankly horrified at this deceptive and dangerous measure.
The danger there, I mean, how does it threaten the water supply and drought preparedness?
Well, the Delta fix does a lot of things. It provides a continuous water supply to the Bay Area, Southern California, and the Valley. It's also part and parcel of a larger fix that would improve the Delta levee systems, which in the case of the inevitable earthquake will, if the Delta levees fail, then we have a terrible situation for our water quality. But it also affects other less well-known water supply opportunities. For example, the Sites Reservoir in Northern California, which is an above-ground storage proposal. It's proposed by a local agency, a joint powers agency in Glenn and Colusa County, developing a reservoir up there that will serve local farmers and that they hope to sell the water to other farmers and municipalities in the state.
Lauren Kagan, a spokesperson for NOAA 53. Yes. He's with us from Sacramento and president of California Foundation for Commerce and Education. Let me go back to John Kupala just for a moment. John, the opposition also says there's nothing in here, since Lauren mentioned earthquakes and water supply and the like. There's nothing in here about exemptions for emergencies or natural disasters.
Well, we have never used revenue bonds for emergencies. We've used GO bonds after earthquakes, and of course FEMA has a federal obligation to come in and deal with emergency situations. So, and what is the revenue that is produced? What's the revenue stream for the correction of for the rebuilding of infrastructure that's been destroyed by natural disaster? That just doesn't make any sense. Let me get back to the JPA issue. It says the JPA is created by the state. So the state has involvement in the management and operation of these projects, and it is the risk to state taxpayers that is at issue here. And this notion that only the bondholders are at risk, I would only point out the situation in Stockton, California, where Moody's, Finch, and Standard & Poor's, the rating agencies, came in and threatened the rating agents, credit rating of the city of Stockton if it did not make good on bonds that were not GO bonds. And that is the crux of this. You may say that the revenue bonds are repaid only by the users of the service, But that is more theoretical than it is in reality. And we have – and there's lots of information on the website pointing out that many times, not only in California, have general jurisdictions, either the state or cities or counties, come in to bail out a revenue bond when the repayment stream has been insufficient. So ultimately, the taxpayers are at risk.
All right, John, let me get Lauren Kay to respond to that, and then we'll bring our listeners into this. Lauren Kay, please.
Well, first of all, on emergencies, I just want to point out that one of the real dangers of lawmaking by initiative is the absence of consideration of unintended consequences. Let me give you an example of where revenue bonds were used in the case of an emergency. Back in the early part of this century, the legislature frankly screwed up the electricity system, and we wound up with a huge electricity supply crisis, and the state had to step in and have the Department of Water Resources buy electricity and sell it to the utilities. They bought this electricity with revenue bonds, billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of electricity. Fortunately, utility ratepayers repaid all of the bonds and paid for the electricity, but this was an exact case of an emergency. We were running out of power. The whole system was in disarray. We used revenue bonds to recover from that emergency. It's not something you think of as typical infrastructure, but it absolutely would have been covered by this measure had this been in effect, and it would have been ridiculous. It would have been absurd to try to solve that problem and go out and get a vote of the people. So my point is, hopefully, we're not going to run into another crisis like that. But we don't know what kind of emergencies are going to arise. We don't know what kind of fiscal instruments we're going to need to solve those problems. And this just creates an obstacle that we just don't need.
All right. We're talking about California Proposition 53 with our election 2016 coverage. It would expand voter approval to revenue bonds, and talking about a measure which would require voter approval for any public works project which used more than $2 billion in revenue bonds. Obviously, Governor Brown is opposed, and the speculation is that he'll be putting some money into opposition. But there are many who support this measure. In fact, there's an article in today's LA Times, which those of you listening may want to look at, by George Skelton, who says there's a skunk at the establishment picnic on Election Day, California's Prop 53. I'd like to have you, our listeners, weigh in and weigh in pro and con, but also feel free to raise questions to John Chagupal and Lauren Kay, who are both with us debating this. We want to be certain that you are involved, and you can do the best now to bring your ideas forward by reaching us a number of different ways. Call us at our toll-free number. That number is 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your involvement, as I said, so please feel free to use the phone lines. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. John Kupal with us, spokesperson for Yes on 53 and president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Lauren Kay, also with us, spokesperson for No on 53 and president of the California Foundation for Commerce and Education. We'll hear from you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As part of our election coverage 2016, we're talking this hour about California Prop 53, which would expand voter approval of revenue bonds. And revenue bonds would be responsible for, in this measure at least, works projects which use more than $2 billion. And voter approval is now required for all state bonds, but not for state revenue bonds. And the real question here is, should this measure be put into making voters responsible? And really, when you think about it, if it indeed voters do vote for Prop 53, it would probably put an end to high-speed rail and the Delta Water Project, which would divert two tunnels on for about $50.5 billion. We've gone over this and certainly talked about it a great deal. This is around Sacramento and San Joaquin Delta to the south of that. We've talked about it on Forum before. We've certainly talked about the high-speed rail project on Forum before. They are probably at stake here, but the real question is, what about voters being involved in revenue bonds? In many states, of course, they are, but not in California. And this is being funded, as we have pointed out, by Dean Cotapassi, who is a rich Stockton farmer and food processor who says he has a moral obligation to his grandchildren and is a philanthropist. There are those who have tried to link him to the Koch brothers, and there's been a lot of questions about his support because he's put $4.5 million into this. We're discussing it, and we certainly want to hear your thoughts about it. And you can join us a number of ways. You can join us by phone, toll-free number 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click in this segment. Any questions or comments, or if you are in support or if you are opposed, I'd like to hear from you. We spoke earlier with Marisa Lagos, who's a reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, and now we have a debate between John Kupal, spokesperson for Yes on 53, and Lauren Kay, spokesperson for No. And let me go right to your calls, and we begin, Jacob, with you. You're on.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Love your show. Before the break, the proponent mentioned, raised the point that in the case where revenue streams dried up, that the state would be left responsible for repaying the bond, and the opposition just didn't respond to that yet, and I just wanted to hear their response, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, let's go first to you, Lauren Kay, and I should probably modify what I said before. Shouldn't assume the voters will put an end to all these projects. They may approve them if it is passed, but it's they're $2 billion projects, over $2 billion projects, and so this would present some formidable obstacles. But let me go first to you on the Jacob's question. Lauren Kay.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I appreciate the chance of to reply to it. For a true revenue bond, state taxpayers are simply not on the hook. If it is not, if it is a revenue bond, that is by definition free from taxpayer obligation. It's a case where the toll payers, where the water users, where the parking lot users, where the hospital patients and insurance companies, they're the ones who are paying back those revenue bonds. And if it's not enough money, then it's the bondholders that are on the hook, not the taxpayers. In the case of these local projects inside and outside of California that John Kupal cites, those are not true revenue bonds because if there is a formal city or state backstop to those bonds, then they become general obligation bonds. And in California, they would require a vote of the people if there's a general obligation.
And we'll hear from you next, John Kupal, in response to what you just heard.
Yeah, I think
Lauren Kay.
Yeah. Sure. Lauren is right in theory but wrong in reality. The reality is no governmental jurisdiction wants that hit from Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch, the Wall Street rating agencies, which will downgrade their general credit worthiness if they default on any kind of bond, including a revenue bond. And again, Stockton is a perfect example. But we have examples that are on the website of the state of Rhode Island coming in and backstopping a
John, you might as well give your website. It's the second time you mentioned it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have it right in front of me. I know that it's if they just Google Yes on 53, I'm sure that'll pop right up, but I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay, sorry, finish your thought.
But in any event, there are many, many, many examples where the government steps in to backfill because they don't want the hit on their credit rating, and that's just kind of an example of the amorphous similarity between revenue bonds and general obligation bonds. They are a commitment to repay, and in other states they sometimes call them moral obligation bonds. But there's all kinds of cases where the state is without being a general obligation bond, it morally obligates itself to repay the revenue bond. And all we're saying is let's conform what's going on in reality with the law. My personal view, and again, I didn't draft this, I like the $300,000 limit. The $2 billion limit is very, very high. And as you've pointed out, Michael, it's only going to impact a couple projects. But if we were purists, which I guess you can't be in politics, I think the threshold should be a lot lower. Now, I am glad, Michael, that you did clarify that there was an assumption that people would reject the twin tunnels. I'm not so sure that's true. We meaning the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, have opposed the Twin Tunnels project because of the shaky financing. Environmentalists have opposed it because of the environmental concerns. But if the state wants to do that, go ahead and make your case to the voters. I think there are a lot of people who want water conveyance, and we recognize the need for water projects, but we need some degree of assurance that the financing is actually going to be viable.
And we should also mention that Dean Cortopassi, whose name has come up frequently, is a leading environmentalist and has been committed to environmental projects for quite some time. But let me get another caller on here, and you can join us toll free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. And we'll get Lola as our next caller. Lola, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, if this were to pass, would it add a huge cost to these infrastructure projects or these revenue, you know, if the, you know, the threshold for the project needs to be then passed by the voters, there'll be public information campaigns, there'll be, you know, ballot education campaigns, community outreach, like, would it add a great deal of cost? And then wouldn't that benefit an organization like the Howard Jarvis guy?
Well, let me go first to John Coupeau.
Well, no, because if we require revenue bonds to be voter approved, that may very well result in the state pursuing what they should be pursuing, which is general obligation bonds. And of course, the interest costs on general obligation bonds, because they are so secure, is significantly less. So I would argue that this kind of threshold for mega projects will reduce costs and certainly increase transparency, because the people who are proponents of the projects will have to show how much it's going to cost and what the repayment schedule is, instead of this sort of blank check situation we have right now.
And we go to you, Lauren Kay, next.
Yes, thank you. Certainly, as the caller suspected, this will add costs to projects. First of all, there's the delay. If you add statewide general elections come around only every 2 years, so you could have as much as a 2-year delay on these projects just to begin with. That makes them more expensive. If they choose to go with private financing, non-tax exempt financing, because they don't want to go to the voters and get a vote, then that will be more expensive. But there's another place where even if there's not a vote in the first place, this proposal can make projects more expensive. This provides a very tempting litigation opportunity for opponents to projects. They can look at a project and maybe it would be covered by this proposal, maybe it wouldn't be, but just as we found with the California Environmental Quality Act, you can threaten projects with litigation over very vague state requirements, which this is, and add cost to a project, kill projects, or get some kind of leverage against a project just by dint of having these vague requirements.
Let me pick up on that point, Lauren Kay. I want to toss it back to John Coupeau, but John, I want to also mention that one of our listeners, Mark, kind of tying in with that, writes, Proposition 53 fails to define the term project. Doesn't the lack of clarity open projects up to lawsuits to determine if they're subject to the terms of this initiative?
Anything can be litigated. We have the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. I think there are probably over a million reported cases on it. So anybody can create ambiguity if they want to. There is a definition of a project that's fairly tight. It on the issue of the delay, look, Lauren's right. CEQA has been used, the California Environmental Quality Act, has been used repeatedly to slow down projects. And massive projects, particularly mega projects, take years, if not decades. Why not get voter approval up front? If you get voter approval up front, it's not going to delay a thing. Just go ahead and get the voter approval up front, let people know how it's going to be paid for and the repayment schedule, and then let them decide. The problem is you're incurring billions and billions of dollars of debt without any oversight, and the decision to incur massive indebtedness is now in the hands of bureaucrats and unelected officials. So that is not a tenable situation, we believe.
Well, we're getting a lot of comments from listeners related to the Delta Tunnel specifically, and that certainly major in terms of the concerns of Mr. Cotopassi. Brian writes, and let me go to you on this, Lauren Kay. Californians should have been given a role on the Delta tunnels. Why weren't they, especially now that it appears it will require taxpayer funding?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure it requires taxpayer funding. And if it requires taxpayer funding, that would be an appropriation by the legislature. And if it's taxpayer debt, then that would require a vote by the people. So the taxpayers, either through their representatives or directly, will have a say if there's taxpayer funding. Secondly, the Delta Tunnels project has been a matter of state legislation and a lot of executive branch commissions, and so there's been a lot of opportunity for input. But more generally, there's obviously a lot of concern about the Delta tunnels. There's a lot of concern about the high-speed rail. If voters, if proponents, if special interests care that much about these projects, they should put these projects on the ballot up front, transparently, for an up or down vote, and not use a sneaky, deceptive, nice-sounding proposal to try to undermine these projects without coming clean. That's dishonest, and that's not in the spirit of how the initiative process should be used.
Of course, you spoke before about this coalition as representing many different interests, and indeed it does. But some would say you got the construction people, the engineering people, you got labor organizations. A lot of this is special interest in terms of the money that's put up for infrastructure projects.
Certainly the people who care about growth and development in this state absolutely care about that, but so do the California League of Conservation Voters. So does the school community, the people who are cared about building schools. So is the Hospital Association, the California Medical Association. They're all opposed to this measure. Agriculture, the Western Growers Association, the bunch of farm bureaus. This is a widely opposed measure. Almost every major newspaper editorial board in the state has issued its opposition on this. And so this is not just a few construction and business interests that care about this. I'd say that this is one of the broadest opposition coalitions I've seen to a measure in a very, very long time.
And what do you say in the opposition about the fact that, in fact, it's a question here from a listener named Kyle who says, wait, this ballot measure is being sponsored by a single wealthy individual? How does this benefit him? Does it seem appropriate that rich people use the initiative system to further their own political goals? You know, we've talked about Mr. Cotopassi in a number of different ways here. What does the opposition say about his motives? Lauren Kay?
Well, I think they speak for themselves. You have a single individual who has an expressed concern about the Delta projects, putting more than $4 million of his own money, and only his own money. I'm not aware of any other money in this, to sponsor a measure that would undermine the infrastructure project. And, you know, as a citizen of and as a voter in California, he has the right to do that. But we just think it's deceptive. We think that if he has a problem with the tunnels, it should be a measure on the tunnels. This will have vast consequences on local projects throughout California, where voters will be from far-flung parts of the state will be voting on projects that they have no interest in. It's really dangerous.
I want to read a few more comments from listeners. Sarah writes, yes, on 53. Bonds increase property taxes, and property taxes are far too high in the state already. Anything that slows spending in California is an improvement. And a tweet from Gagan who says, why an arbitrary $2 billion threshold? $2 billion might look huge today, but as this economy grows or shrinks, that number might become insignificant. It's always better to tie limits to the economic indicator that shows our debt affordability. Let's treat California GDP as our credit score. The $2 billion number looks more like Prop 53 is targeting particular current projects. You say what to that, John Kopal?
Well, first of all, there is an inflation factor in the $2 billion. So as the economy grows and as inflation increases, it does go up. But look, you know, Lauren keeps on calling this a deceptive, sneaky measure. People, read it for yourselves. All it says is if the state's going to issue revenue bonds in excess of $2 billion, they have to get voter approval. That's all it says. It doesn't stop anything. You just have to get voter approval. And as we've seen from mega projects, the financing becomes very shaky. What we have seen, and I've been in public finance on representing taxpayers for 30 years, and what I've seen is the larger the project, the more shaky and speculative the financing is. The smaller the project, usually some of these local cities and counties do a pretty good job of identifying their capital needs and going out and getting the financing for it. But when you get into these things like high-speed rail or the Twin Tunnels, then the financing becomes very speculative. And look, the issue that the tunnels will not require taxpayer funds is if the users are the people who use water in California, that's almost 100% overlay with our voting population. So, you know, it's not like a handful of people who are the beneficiaries of this. These mega projects, at least in theory, at least we're told, will benefit millions. And if millions are being benefited, what's so wrong with giving them a voice in whether or not these projects proceed?
And again, John Kupal with us from Sacramento is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and spokesperson for Yes on 53. Let me bring more of your calls on. We'll go to Howard. Howard? Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Okay. I have two comments for the gentleman from the Jarvis Foundation. The first is, if you're concerned about general funds being used to repay revenue bonds, wouldn't a better solution just be to amend the Constitution to say that no state or local or county, municipal, whatever, general funds can be used to repay revenue bonds?
I think it's a worthy question, John Kupal. Why not just amend the Constitution?
Yeah. I think that would be pretty good. And in fact, I think we could adopt what other states have done, and they make no distinction whatsoever between revenue bonds and general obligation bonds. They simply say you got to go get voter approval. But as the proponent of this, Dino Cortopassi, says, look, we live in a world where we already see the coalition against us, and I think from Mr. Cortopassi's perspective, as he says, this is at least a start. And I do think, and that is a broader benefit of this particular proposal, and that is we need to start talking about debt, whether it's revenue bonds, general obligation bonds, unfunded pension obligations. I think we've really delayed looking at California's balance sheet. And if this measure, Prop 53, does nothing other than spur a discussion on the amount of debt we have, I think it's very good. And it is a start. It is a start at getting those who are financially obligated to pay these things back some voice.
Actually, what Mr. Cortopassi has said, just for the record, is I can't say this on the air, it's a GD start. You can fill in what those initials stand for. And by the way, just for the record also, he has put up $4.5 million, but a lot of the money is in his wife's name that has been contributed. Maybe money that he earned, but it's got Joan Cortopassi's name after it. Let me thank Howard for his call. Let me go back, if I may, to you, Lauren Kay, on a question from a listener named Ryan. He says, could you share what occurs when a revenue bond defaults due to the revenues not supporting the carry costs or repayment of the bond? Does the liability then become backstopped by taxpayers if, through contract or practice, these types of bonds ultimately get backstopped by taxpayers, then it seems reasonable taxpayers should have some control over said bonds.
Yes, one would think so. That's a good question, that it would be reasonable if they're backstopped by taxpayers. But they're not. Revenue bonds are only repaid by the revenues that were pledged in the first place. Tolls, parking revenues, hospital fees, whatever they might be. Fortunately, in California, we rarely have defaults even of revenue bonds. And taxpayers, for true revenue bonds, taxpayers are just not on the hook. Even in the bankruptcies in the cities of Vallejo, San Bernardino, Mammoth, none of those revenue bonds that they had on their books were repaid with general taxpayer money.
I asked you that question, Lauren, because it had kind of a Pro 53 slant. Let me go back to John Kupal with a question that's kind of an anti-slant on 53. Angela says, I feel a moral obligation to my grandchildren, specifically regarding climate change. Won't this proposition further slow the process of getting important, perhaps unpopular, long-term environmental projects passed? John Kupal?
Well, I think each project will have to be judged on its own merit, whether or not it is good for the environment or not. I do know there are very, very significant numbers of environmental groups, Save the Delta and other groups, that are very, very concerned about the impact of the environment of building a 30-mile massive trench down the middle of a very environmentally sensitive area of California. So I think whether or not the project is good, and again, let's get back to the various reasons why the Twin Tunnels has issues. We have approached it from the idea of the financing is shaky. Now, Governor Brown has said the financing is there because we have all these water districts that will pay for it, and Metropolitan Water District of Los Angeles really, really wants the Twin Tunnels, claiming that their customer base, including the County of San Diego, will pony up the money for it. The County of San Diego Water Authority says, not us. We're not paying for this. And you see up and down the state the people who are wholesalers of water saying, don't hold us responsible for this. So again, this has caused us as a taxpayer group a significant amount of angst about how this thing's going to be paid for.
Well, you're what listening we to would... Forum. We're talking to John Kupel and to Lauren Kay, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let me go to another caller here, and that's Charlie from Berkeley. You're on.
Thank you. Yeah, my question is, would this apply to the California Higher Education Facilities Authority that borrows on behalf of nonprofit universities like Stanford? And if so, would it only be for individual bond offerings over $2 billion? Because I assume that there's been very few bond offerings of that size by on behalf of our nonprofit university.
Yeah, what about application there, John Kupoff? Let's go to you.
Yeah, the dollar amount is significantly high. We haven't seen any examples. In fact, the opponents of 53 have trotted out a number of projects they think could potentially be impacted by Prop 53. The reality is none of them past that threshold of $2 billion, at least in terms of the identified financing right now. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with any sort of funding for private universities, and I don't know the impact. I don't know whether those are revenue bonds or not. I'm not familiar with it.
Lauren Kay?
Well, the short answer is yes, that financing authority would be covered by this to the extent that it issues $2 billion in bonds for a single project. And let me just talk about, if I could, what a project means. There is some question about whether you could break these projects up. And the fact is you cannot break projects up. The law specifically says that if you break projects into many parts, or if they could be connected or they might be connected someday, then they are all a single project. And so that's another reason why we don't know what the effect of this is going to be. And while the legislative analyst was concerned and said that the measure does not define a project. So we just don't know. There's so much uncertainty on this.
Let me go to you, Lauren Kay, on a question from a listener named Calder who writes, my questions are for the guest opposing Prop 53. Is the health of the state not in our collective interest? Is your faith in the state's ability to justify these projects to the voters so lacking that you feel it necessary to exclude them from the decision-making? How is your argument different than giving your college student a credit card and saying, this is for emergencies, but I have no way to curb your spending, so I'll just trust you? Seems like you are arguing against oversight in the name of those who benefit from runaway spending.
Well, I think the analogy isn't quite apt, because what you've got in this case is a requirement on a lot of potential local projects, very large local projects, whether they be airports or toll bridges or water projects, where you have voters elsewhere in California voting on those projects that serve a local area. And so you I'm trying to get back to the analogy, but you have oversight from voters and people who don't have an interest in the project in the first place. So the whole principle of local control is undermined when you have voters in San Diego voting on a project that only concerns the northern Central Valley.
All right, let me try to get a final call in here. Bob, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks a lot. These referenda, particularly the financial ones, are difficult to explain and have side effects, and are difficult to understand what their side effects will be, and politically impossible to reverse. And as an example, Prop 13, pushed by the Jarvis people, have basically taken the finest public school system in the world and basically reduced it to the bottom of the
I'm sure that John Kupal would take issue with that, but we don't have time, and we're unfortunately going to have to leave that for another day. Prop 13 will continue to be debated year after year after year, but I do have to conclude, and I want to thank our guest, John Kupal, again with us on the pro side, president of the Harvard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, Lauren Kay, on the nay side, and president of the California Foundation for Commerce and Education. They're a nonpartisan think tank affiliated with the California Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you, and we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. In our hour ahead, we're going to talk with Mary Ellen Hannibal, a Bay Area writer and editor, about her new book, Citizen Scientists, Searching for Heroes and Hope in an Age of Extinction. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Senior editor is Dan Zolb. Executive producer is Joanne Wallace. Thank you for listening. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.